Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Hour number two, John Dickinson and Stephen Langford is with you here until 2 o'clock on 95.7 The Game. Good to be live and local once again here on a Saturday, and we're going to be doing it on Sunday as well tomorrow, as Kyle Madsen will be joining me in this same time slot tomorrow.
K-Boogie!
Until 2. K-Boogie, back at it again. Yeah, due to the holiday weekend, we were separated from each other there. I hope everybody enjoyed their holiday weekend, but back at it here as we continue, Steven, to push toward the return of sports. It really does look like it's all systems go.
It does, and we've got a sport cooking right now with the American Century Championship, where all the celebrities are playing in Tahoe, and I think they teed off, the last pairing that teed off was at 10:20 this morning. But I'm just looking at these pairings, JD. And some of these look like they could be a lot of fun, because how they're doing this in the American Century Championship is they are, so if you get a birdie, then you get 3 points. If you get an eagle, you get 6 points. If you get a par, you get 1 point. If you get a bogey, you get no points. If you get a double bogey, you get minus 2 points. And Tony Romo and John Smoltz and Kyle Williams are leading the pack. They are a heavy favorite right now with Tony Romo with 20, John Smoltz with 20, and Kyle Williams with 25. And there are a ton of, if you could find it, there are a ton of pairings that I'd enjoy playing with. I would love to be added to it. But the one that looks like the most fun is the one that's doing the worst. And that's just, every team has three so far, but this team only has two. And that's DeMarcus Ware and Eddie George, who have a combined minus 54 right now. Could you imagine how much fun they're having on the course?
Wow. Yeah, have you ever been to that event?
That is a
great event. And that's actually one of the events that, I mean, it's a beautiful course up there in Tahoe on the South Shore, Edgewood, beautiful course. But that is one of the events that I'm happy to see that it's ongoing, and they're obviously doing it, for charity and trying to involve, COVID, and trying to help, benefit that cause. But that is one of the best and coolest fan events, going. So to see that event, it kind of makes me a little sad, honestly, that they obviously had to do it, without fans due to the pandemic, because I went to that a couple of times when I was a kid, and I know there's a few friends, obviously, that don't work, in the industry, haven't been blessed like we are to be able to go to a lot of things, with a credential. But that's an event that I know a lot of friends that still would go to that, because you do get access to the athletes that just is kind of unprecedented. And I know it's changed a little bit over the years, but it's just everybody's having a good time and relaxing and joking, and you can get autographs if you're up there, on a couple of the practice days. And so it kind of hit me where I was happy to see that event, because I love it. It's kind of always been just tradition to catch a little bit of it. But it also was kind of a bummer that obviously they couldn't do it with fans, because there's, that is a huge fan event. And very cool for the fans that are able to go.
Yeah, and you know, I've had a few friends who aren't part of the media who have gone before, and you know, they're taking pictures with Barkley, and you know, I can't even remember, and I just remember Barkley was being the main one, but he's always a star when he's over there. But it's just a cool place where athletes are just willing to, you know, willing to communicate with you. And be open. And you know what I mean? Because sometimes there are those moments where, you know, you see an athlete in a random place. I mean, you don't know if you want to bother that guy or not. You don't know if you want to go up and ask him for a picture if you're just, you know, see an athlete in a Starbucks or something like that. So I think it's really cool. And, you know, they know what to expect. But some of these pairings just, I always look at them every single year. And they're just so random every time. But could you imagine teeing off at 9:45 this morning with Larry Fitzgerald, Jerry Rice, and Stephen Curry? That's got to be the most popular pairing of all of them, because you got the likes of Case Keenum, Del Curry, and Mark Mulder are in another pairing. Miles Teller, Doug Flutie, Trace Crawford in another one. Anthony Lynn, Reggie Bush, Kyle Rudolph, Larry the Cable Guy, Ray Romano, and John O'Hurley, which is a, it's just like, hey, yeah, we had a sitcom in the past. We're going to pair each guy up here. And it changes every single day. But, I mean, they're a fun-looking bunch today, that's for sure.
Larry checking in on the Chilton Autobody text line at 888-957-9570. Or Lobo, rather. Lobo in Fairfield. I went there back in high school to the celebrity tournament. Picked up one of Michael Jordan's smoked cigars off the ground and sold it to my cousin. LMAO. Like, that's the kind of access we're talking about. Thanks, Lobo.
I mean, how many cigars does Michael Jordan smoke on that thing? Because in The Last Dance, it seemed like he was smoking a cigar after every game, even off the court when the cameras weren't on him. I'll assume he was smoking cigars then. That guy must go through, I mean, one every three holes or so? I mean, there's a pretty likely chance that if you pick up a smoked cigar at that thing, that it's going to be Michael Jordan's.
Well, and it's not, and honestly, it's not only the access and the ability to interact with the guys on the course. You know, they all mostly stay in the hotels there, too, in suites. So, like, if you're in the casino, like, you'll see them walking around in the casinos, or they'll be, you know, having their own high roller games that they'll be, you know, walking in and out of from time to time. So that's another just kind of a cool aspect, kind of a cool event that, it's unfortunate, obviously, given everything going on, although appropriate,
right,
that the fans aren't a part of that one. How's Steph doing?
I have no idea. I'm not even looking at the scores. I'm just looking at the call sheets. I wish I had the scores for you. I've been trying to find them. I'm sure he's killing it, though. And can I just say one thing with Steph and, you know, the return to sports? And we were talking about this a little bit earlier with Buster Posey, but I was just saying that essentially Posey, had he not, you know, had this adoption stuff not even, you know, happened, and Posey just wanted to opt out of the 2020 season to take a break, it seems like, I feel like Steph and Draymond, I don't know so much about Clay because he doesn't have kids, but Steph and Draymond, though, it seems like, you know what, this year that they've had off, it might be much needed. You know, it seems like Steph, you've had Draymond come out and say that he would play in the bubble if his team were still in it, or, you know, that the bottom eight teams, if that thing were to happen, then he might play. But, I mean, it just seems like with these guys, a year off is exactly what they need. And Steph, I don't even know how much he's really thinking about the basketball season this year, considering he's been going deep into June for the past 5 years of his life when his kids are growing up.
Well, it goes back to, you know, the Steve Kerr comment at the end of the finals last year, you know, about needing a sabbatical year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Warriors literally have had a sabbatical year. I think a year it would be good. I don't think 18 months is optimum, optimal rather. I mean, you're going to wind up from the end of the NBA finals, and I know this has been chronicled, but the end of the NBA finals last June until probably late December. So we're talking 18 and a half months,
right,
between those two events. And Klay Thompson will have not been on the basketball court. and Steph Curry will have played five games over the course of that span. And yeah, rest and health and all of those things, needing a sabbatical, a mental break. I think you could put Draymond in there. You know, Draymond was the one guy that sort of had to grit his teeth and play through, you know, the hand that the Warriors were dealt in the 1920 season. But he picked his spots and got his time, and now obviously is able to really enjoy an extended offseason, which I think would be beneficial to him. But one of the more fascinating things about the Warriors next season is, you know, how much is too much, you know, and has this gone to a point where it may, you know, wind up being somewhat detrimental? Because I don't think anybody would have wanted it to be as long as it's going to wind up being, again,
right?
Basically 18 months and five games combined for Steph and Clay,
right?
In their prime still, you know, so it's maybe you get a little bit of an extended prime because of the time off, although Clay obviously coming back from a major injury.
Right. Well, just to give you an update, Steph right now, he's through five. He's got seven today, and he's got 21 total, which is tied for ninth. So we got Jerome Bettis, who's shooting 11 today, and you got Derek Lowe, Deron Williams, and Adam Thielen and Ozzie Smith, who have eight so far, and then you got Steph, who has seven. So he's a pretty good company right now today, and, you know, they're all on different holes and whatnot. So Steph is shooting 7 through 5, which is pretty damn good.
All right. That's, you know, rack up points in that, what, Stableford scoring system. You rack up the points.
I'd be so far in the minus if I was playing in this thing. If you're giving me a -1 and a -2 for a bogey and a double bogey, respectively, I'm having a -50 by the time. I don't even know if that's physically possible, but I'm probably getting a -36. I don't know if they continue with the triple bogeys and the quadruple bogeys.
Well,
I don't even know how that works.
At some point, they just you
pick
just
it up.
Move on,
yeah.
Because it's, yeah, at some point you just move on because of, you know, and they switched to that system in an attempt to, you know, make the scores not look as ugly as, because they actually back in the day used to just use the normal, you know, tournament style,
right,
under par. And there would be a couple of guys that would be right around par or a little bit under par, but there would also be guys that would be, you know, they would end up being, you know, 160 over par over, you know, through the three rounds, you know, you go, you know, +50, +50, +50 because you guys that are shooting, you know, 120s,
right,
for 3 days straight.
Yeah. Yeah. No one wants to see it. There was a video that surfaced, and I want to get to some point about the value of rings in terms of the Hall of Fame case. And I want to kind of tie that into Steph and Buster Posey, but real quick, there's a video I saw of Patrick Mahomes. I think yesterday he was playing with Travis Kelce and Charles Barkley, and Mahomes he was stumbling trying to grab his ball out of the hole. And I'm not saying he'd had a few drinks or anything. I'm not saying anything like that. I think he was completely sober and he was still not able to pick the ball out of the hole. And I'm like, yep, that is the highest paid athlete in North American sports history. A guy who can't seem to pick a golf ball out of the hole. But anyway, that's just something that popped into my mind, and I just kind of mentioned that on the air. But when thinking about Steph Curry, and we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, JD, when we were talking about, you know, Steph Curry's finals MVP situation and, you know, how that affects his legacy because of what Rob Parker said. And I've been thinking about, you know, Buster Posey and how he's cemented his legacy already, I think, within Major League Baseball. But you got to add the three rings onto it whenever you're talking about Posey and, you know, the impact that he's had on the San Francisco Giants. But which championship in sports do you feel like holds less value when you're talking about the legacy? So, for example, when you have football, for the most part, you look at rings right away. But when you're looking at baseball and you're talking about Hall of Famers for baseball, you're more looking at stats and how they've done each year and the All-Star game. And then the rings are kind of secondary, I feel like. Am I wrong in that assessment?
Well, Yeah, I mean, I think with basketball, it's rings because the greatest of the greats have such an impact on the game.
Like right.
The all-time great players are so good that their teams are championship caliber teams just based on the fact that they are there. You know, if you have a couple of them, like if you have one, you can contend. If you have two, you can be, you know, really good. If you have three, you know, it's kind of championship or but it's championships there. And then I think the conversation with football is quarterbacks and rings.
Yeah.
I think once you get to other positions, it gets devalued quickly, but it's absolutely there when you speak about quarterbacks and rings, in addition to stats.
Right.
Baseball, I do think you're right, is where the championships carry the least amount of weight, but I think you could also make a case that part of that is because baseball has fewer favorites that win championships. In essence, they have more upsets.
Right.
So you get, you know, maybe better players on some random teams.
Exactly.
That wind up winning championships. Like if Mike Trout was an NBA player.
There we go.
You know what I mean? He might have three rings. And if he didn't, he'd be considered a colossal underachiever.
You'd completely expect a guy like Mike Trout, who for me, being a young guy, he's got to be in the top three conversation of best players that I've ever seen. And he's already drawing comparisons to guys like Mickey Mantle, stats like that. You'd expect that dude, with those comparisons being made in baseball, you'd expect him to at least have some sort of championship in another sport if they were talking about him the same way as they did. If they were, you know, comparing him to, you know, guys like Jordan or guys like even a LeBron, you know, like it would be completely different. I've just always found it fascinating. And, you know, when it comes to the NFL, this is where the rings for me and the quarterbacks, I always go to Eli Manning for that conversation, you know, because in my lifetime watching Eli Manning, I've never had that feeling of, uh-oh, we got to face Eli Manning in the New York Giants. Like, I've never had that feeling. I felt, oh, maybe he could do something, but I've never looked at him as that intimidating quarterback, throws under 60%. That's his career completion percentage. And I always go back to that when thinking about just the impact of championships on the Hall of Fame, because statistically, Eli Manning was never really a top five quarterback. In terms of guys who you were most scared of your team to face, Eli Manning was never in that conversation. So I just think it's fascinating when looking at Buster Posey, and the three rings are the last thing you look at really when it comes to his accolades. Whereas with football and Eli Manning, the reason that he's going to the Hall of Fame for most people is because of the two championship rings, and that's it.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's just harder to find outliers too in right. the NFL when it comes to quarterbacks. I mean, just, you know, look at the best quarterbacks, let's say, of the last, you know, decade to decade and a half, right? You know, Brady with six, and, you know, there just aren't very many outliers. You know, Drew Brees has got one. Aaron Rodgers has got one.
Roethlisberger.
Roethlisberger's got a couple. It's just, who are the, you know, you could go back 30 years and where are the outliers? There's very few. You know, Troy Aikman won three and Steve Young got his and Brett Favre won one. And, you know, the outliers are just fewer and farther between, the Dilfers and the, you know, the Nick Foles and the, you know, Jeff Hostetler back, you know, when he was, you know, he took over for the Giants.
Flacco.
You know, yeah, but, you know, Flacco's kind of in between.
Right.
I think that's an interesting one because I think, but yeah, Flacco's got one, and, you know, obviously Dilfer's the name that comes up. Brad Johnson, is another one. So there, you know, there's a few kind of random ones here and there, but you don't have those guys that have ever really won multiple. And, you know, Eli Manning may be the closest one, but Eli Manning was still damn good.
Yeah.
You know, Eli Manning was still damn good. Like, he may not have been the elite level, you know, the Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, you know, that level, Manning, you know, how Peyton Manning is viewed. but he was still pretty good compared to some of the other names. He's better than a lot of the guys we've just mentioned, if not all of them.
And, you know, he may not have been in the top five conversation as far as quarterbacks during the season, but he was always consistently in the top 10, and there's something to be said about that. And, and when it comes to Buster Posey and the three rings that he has, one thing that we don't really look at when it comes to his accolades and talking about, you know, where his legacy's at and where the Giants are going to miss him primarily this year, but it's just calling games, you know, squatting down every inning, being the catcher, being the leader on that team. Those things you can't really quantify into stats. But, I mean, for how long that he's done it, I think that needs to be something that people recognize, is just how much of an impact that he's had on the pitching staff and what he could do in terms of help leading this team in the people want to call it the rebuilding year, but in this deconstruction time, Buster Posey seems to be one of the few on this team who could have been a bright spot this year. So I think that's where people, you know, might miss him most from opting out of this 2020 season.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570, John Dickinson and nice guy Steven. Steven Langford here on 95.7 The Game, as we're with you until 2 o'clock. We got off track a little bit in this segment, and it was some good conversation. I want to get back a little bit with the Buster Posey chatter as it pertains to if Buster Posey stopped playing, like if Buster Posey didn't come back, would he be a Hall of Famer? Because I think there are a lot of folks out there that would say, yes, no brainer, he's in. And I think there's a lot of folks out there, Stephen, that are, you know, screaming at their radio right now saying, you are absolutely crazy, JD. Buster Posey's not a Hall of Famer if he quit playing right now and did not come back. Let's get into that coming up next. It's John Dickinson and Stephen Langford here. We're rolling along on a Saturday morning on 95.7 The Game. I guess right now we should start the show.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
We are back waiting on John Dickinson as we get some stuff sorted out with him. But the main thing that we're asking for, 888-957-9570, JD, at the Chilton Auto Body text line. And you threw out this question, and this is the, I don't know, should I just be straight up with my answer about Buster Posey being in the Hall of Fame or not? Can I just be straight up with that?
Yeah. What do you got?
I think he is. I absolutely think he is. And I just really want to hear anyone who wants to make the case that he's not in the Hall of Fame at 888-957-9570, because you mentioned it before the segment. I think that when you said there are fans who think that he's a no-brainer type of Hall of Famer, I am in that camp. I think it's a no-brainer for Buster Posey. If he were to go on that Zoom conference and immediately announced that he's just not playing baseball anymore, he's retiring, I would have been of the opinion, all right, 5 years down the line, he can be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think he is as well. I think he was a couple of years away from just absolutely making it a no-brainer with the three World Series and the six, you know, being a six-time All-Star and a Rookie of the Year and an MVP, and somebody that's, you know, he's been top 10 in the MVP a couple of times. I think he was as high as sixth in the Giants' third championship season. But yeah, being, you know, the best position player on a team that wins three World Series in 5 years, with an MVP and a Rookie of the Year and just the overall numbers. I think, you know, he was a couple of years away, though, from making it a no-brainer. But he was still an All-Star in 2018. It's just really the dip in power, you know, because I'm looking at, you know, his average and those things. You know, it's 257, obviously, in 2019 was a steep decline.
Right.
But he went from, you know, 24 to 15, back up to 22, down to 19, down to 14, down to 12. So there's been a decline in power, you know, 16, 17, 18, and 19, to the point where he's hitting, you know, 5 and 7 home runs the last couple of years. I mean, if he was still in the 15 range,
right,
and maybe driving in a few more runs over the course of the last couple of years, even years where he's been an All-Star, I don't think, I mean, even the naysayers, and I do believe there are a lot of naysayers out there, even they would have to be like, well, it's with the three championships and everything else, he's in.
Do you think when it comes to the Hall of Fame that, I don't know if writers take this into account, but I personally think this is something that's, I think could be pretty important, and I think that could be a factor in a Hall of Fame case, but especially in baseball with the way the contracts are set up. It's like that Kevin Hart joke with the way my bank account is set up. But with the way contracts are set up, staying on one team for your entire career, I think that says something. And I think that can, if you're going to tell me reasons as to why he is a Hall of Famer, and one of your reasons is that he stayed with the Giants for his entire career and stayed with one team, I personally think that's worth something. I don't know about you, but I think it's one of the hardest things in sports to do is just to stick with one team for your entire career.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is the case. And I think, you know, you think Buster Posey would get added consideration for that?
I think he should. Okay. In a time now where it seems like players are going wherever they want left and right, they're not staying with the same team. I mean, one guy who I thought was going to be like on the Red Sox for life was Mookie Betts. You know, there's certain players like that. Mike Trout is a guy you can expect to be on the Angels for quite a while due to that contract and it being fully guaranteed and whatnot, but you really never know. Bryce Harper, you thought that he might have stayed with the Nationals for his entire career, then he goes to the Phillies. There are these players now that could be prospects for the or we're going to be making cases for them to be in the Hall of Fame later on down their careers. Those guys have already switched teams. You know, it's like I think that there's something to it. Steph staying with the Warriors. LeBron hasn't really stayed with the same amount of teams, obviously, or same. He hasn't stayed with the Cavaliers for his entire career. I think there's something to it.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Stephen Langford here on 95.7 The Game, talking a little bit about Buster Posey. As Buster Posey announced yesterday that he is opting out of the 2020 season, set to return, though, in 2021. And, I feel, you know, Buster Posey, you know, if he comes back in 21, let's say, and he can even hit, you know, 15 home runs and get back closer to 300 and do that for 2 years, then I think it becomes an absolute no-brainer. But you look at catchers, you know, with 3 World Series.
Right.
I mean, to me, that in conjunction with the MVP and the Rookie of the Year, and again, he was the Rookie of the Year and basically changed the course of the Giants season in 2010 when he came up. So he was, you know, he was the constant, right? He was the straw that was stirring that drink in terms of, you know, a change into the Giants, you know, making that run, obviously, with the great pitching. He was the MVP of the National League in 2012. You know, so I think, and then obviously a part of the team that won in 2014 when they beat Kansas City. And I think because this group is so synonymous, that the teams that won championships, you know, they're linked to their great pitching. And I think anytime you have that great pitching, the guy that's putting down the signals is often credited as being, you know, a part of that too. So I think he gets, and you alluded to this a little bit, I do think he gets a little bit extra based on the fact that, you know, he's been one of the better defensive catchers in the game and one of the better game callers in the game, in addition to being an MVP level hitter on a couple of those teams that won World Series.
Yeah, and one of only, if I'm not mistaken, five catchers to have won the MVP award. You got Joe Mauer, Ivan Rodriguez, Thurman Munson, and Johnny Bench, who won it twice. So that just goes to show you, in the amount of time that the league's been going on, only five times has a catcher actually won the MVP award for the American League, and only the second catcher in the National League to win an MVP award besides Johnny Bench. The rest were in the American League. That speaks for itself right there. And, you know, you could tell he's the lack of power. I mean, you can look on the stats and, you know, that you can look on the stat sheet and fine. You can say, you know, he's lost power specifically because of the stats, but you could just tell right now that, you know, he's lost some speed in his swing. He's not looking as he wasn't looking as comfortable at the plate, being able to guess what the pitcher was doing. In this time from when he was, you know, when he was an MVP in the early 2010s leading up to now, there's been a drastic change in pitching and the speed of which these starting pitchers are averaging, you know, 94, 95 mile an hour fastballs. And then relief pitchers are averaging somewhere around like 97 to 98. So I feel like he's had a tough time really adjusting to the speed of that. But either way, with everything that's happened in the past couple of years, I don't think that that has any bearing on his Hall of Fame case. And I truly think this, JD, if you do not believe he's a Hall of Famer, then I think you're out of your mind. I really do. I think that he's a surefire Hall of Famer, and he definitely is. And from the 5-1-0, a 40-ish war with 1,300 hits doesn't cut it for the Hall. Fine. Whatever. If you're going to use those stats as the only reasons as to why he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, you need to look at a lot of other things.
Yeah, I would say, though, that there are people out there that I think, because of the decline, you know, the last couple of years, he becomes, I think, more susceptible to, like, my go-to for Hall of Fame is, you know, it's the instant reaction test, right? It's what we were having that conversation earlier, and I said, well, what are the Giants rebuilding or not? Like, to me, it's, is this guy a Hall of Famer or not? And I think, you know, there are folks out there that when you say, you know, Buster Posey, I think a lot of Giants fans would say, yeah, absolutely. But I think a lot of baseball fans that aren't necessarily Giants fans would have a little bit more of a difficult time saying, yeah, no brainer. You know, so I think that's where the conversation may change a little bit. Let's get to Moose in San Jose. Moose on the phone lines here at 888-957-9570. Hey, Moose.
Hey, fellas. Hey, JD. Hey, Langford. Hey, nice guy, Steven. How you doing?
Good, Moose.
I just wanted to call in and say, so I definitely believe Posey is a Hall of Famer. I'm going to tell you why I don't think he's going to get in as soon as the locals would believe, is because you got a lot of these analytical nerds these days that look at stats like that last texter was saying and just completely label it black and white. He's not. But if you were, when you say guys that are Bay Area fans would want him in, it's because we watched him on a day-to-day basis. You saw the leadership. You saw him catch, what, two no-hitters, a perfect game, three World Series, going up with Bumgarner the horse in 2014. And essentially, at the end, you see him after he hugs Bumgarner. He pretty much puts his head down in his chest and gives in to him, saying, man, you essentially just wrote it for us. What this guy's done for the younger kids that are coming up, I mean, it's Hall of Fame caliber. Rookie of the Year, MVP. If he doesn't get hurt in 2011, you don't know what he's going to do after from Rookie of the Year going into a MVP year after being hurt. I mean, the guy's a stud. I mean, even with 2011, and essentially he's only played like nine full seasons in his 10th year, you get a few more that last year out of him if he comes back. He's a surefire Hall of Famer.
Thanks, Moose. Appreciate the call. You know, Bobby Evans was on the morning show yesterday. I was filling in for Dibs with Joe and Lowe. And Bobby Evans brought up the point about 2011, and I had kind of forgotten about it. But, yeah, he got hurt at the end of May, and that was his first, you know, full season in the big leagues. It was at least supposed to be his first full season in the big leagues. So, I mean, you look at it, and, you know, he wound up playing 45 games that year. And, you know, he was on his way to having another year in line with, you know, what he did in 2010 when he came up. Basically, he came up in 2010 right at the same point that he went down in 2011. So you almost, in some ways, could combine those 2 years, make it 1 year, and credit him for another year, in essence, at that type of production level. So, I know, you know, injuries are a part of it, and guys that get hurt obviously have different legacies than guys that don't. And it's not like Buster Posey's been injury-prone throughout his career. He just had the one gruesome injury on the play at the plate there in 2011.
Right.
But it is interesting. I thought it was a good point by Bobby Evans that he would have had a hell of a extra good year added to his resume.
Yeah, and I feel like it's been one of the more unfair things in sports. One of the unfair takes is calling, when they change the rule for catchers and how they can interfere with the plate and these interference rules, blaming it on Buster Posey. Have you ever heard that take before, where people say it's because of Buster Posey that we can't have the same collisions at home plate? Have you heard that?
Yeah. People have said, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's just so unfair to put that to put the blame on Buster Posey for that just because he was trying to make a play and then his ankle rolled in a certain direction. Like, that is one that really irks me. And I find it interesting, JD, about people in the Bay Area who don't believe that Buster Posey is a Hall of Famer. I think the biggest debate that you can have, I think the Matt Cain one is a pretty fascinating one to have. I think the Tim Lincecum one is a pretty fascinating one to have as well. But I feel like among the Bay Area and Giants fans who don't believe Buster Posey is a Hall of Famer, it's because those are the fans who are too afraid of being called a homer. The ones who are in denial.
Now, you're not, I want to just make sure I'm clear. Like, are you saying there's a case to be made for Matt Cain or Tim Lincecum?
I'm saying that if you want to bring that up, I'm not saying there is a case. I'm not saying they are Hall of Famers, but I think that you can have more of a debate to where there are some people who do believe that. I mean, two Cy Youngs in a row, World Series champions, Matt Cain with a, you know, the perfect game, whatever, even though he only did that against, the Astros and the no-hitter or whatever. But, I think that those are ones you can have more debates over. But I feel like if you're on the opposite side of the Buster Posey Hall of Fame thing, there's not much of a case that you can make.
Yeah, I think I think the case against Buster Posey is that the numbers were not gaudy enough when they were their most gaudy. And they haven't, you know, remained close enough to gaudy the last couple of years. And if they had been a little closer to that, then he would be in for sure with the MVP and the Rookie of the Year and the 3 World Series. I don't think there's any case to be made for Tim Lincecum or Matt Cain. I actually think there's a case to be made for Madison Bumgarner, though, based on the postseason and more specifically the World Series resume. I don't think there's a case necessarily to be made. Madison Bumgarner's regular seasons would say no, he's not a Hall of Famer, but the good regular seasons with the dominant postseasons and in particular World Series, I think those conversations would be, I think you could have a chat about Madison Bumgarner being a Hall of Famer.
Right. But, you know, I think nationally, though, too, I don't know if the Buster Posey's not a Hall of Famer. I don't think that case is as prevalent or common as you'd think. I think there are a lot of national baseball writers who do believe that Buster Posey's a Hall of Famer specifically because of the position that he's playing. And, it's that Draymond Green type of effect. You know, they people think Draymond Green is overrated because of what he puts up on the stat sheet, but it's not the box score that you need to look at for Draymond. It's what he does on the court. It's what he does defensively, you know, directing traffic, doing all these certain things, taking the ball out sort of as a makeshift point guard every now and then. It's the same with Buster Posey. He's in the squat for a majority of his career. He's helped, again, we've mentioned this multiple times, but the pitching staff has ultimately been better because of Buster Posey, and that's stuff that can't show up on the stat sheet. And I feel like a majority of, you know, the national baseball analysts, bigger baseball fans, I think they respect what Posey has done. And being a six-time All-Star as a catcher while being, again, I'm going to throw this out there again, but by being only the second catcher in National League history to win the MVP, I think they respect that.
Yeah, I think there's an old school, new school aspect to it. Like, I think the older school writers are going to have Posey's back and have him in. And I think the newer wave, like you mentioned, the newer wave may have a little bit more of a difficult time with it when it's all said and done, and they have to evaluate, you know, his candidacy. I think the other part to it, as it pertains to that specifically, is I think if you go back to, let's say, 2000, and I'm going to look at a number here. Let's say you go back to 2015, even, where, you know, Posey hit 318 and he drove in 95 runs. And yeah, his home run production dipped to 14, but he still had, you know, 33 doubles. I think at that point in time, you know, Buster Posey had been up for 6 years. He had the, you know, the 1 year that it was basically five. Again, if you combine 2010 and 2011, basically 5 years of play and three World Series. And if you just stopped his career at 15,
right,
I think a lot of people at that point would have said, all right, well, he is clear cut on his way to being a Hall of Famer. Like at that, like if he just continues and has, let's say, the next 5 or 6 years, like the last 2 years, forget about like the rookie of the year or the MVP level, but if he could have just had 4 or 5 more years at a similar level as, let's say, 2014 or 2015, as we now are in 2020, I think people would say, all right, no brainer. But because he hasn't done that, and there has been a decline, I think that's where the conversation is. Well, he just needed a couple more years to really, really, really salt it away. And I think there's some out there that believe he still needs a couple of more years to firmly salt it away.
Right, right. And do you think, though, that he could improve in the next couple of years? Do you think that there's a chance that he would, his numbers could, maybe not necessarily his home run numbers, because power is power, but, you know, he wouldn't necessarily be hitting 250 again. He wouldn't necessarily just be hitting for 41 and 38 RBIs respectively. Do you think that he can overall just improve those stats and maybe just prove the doubters, prove them wrong a little bit?
I mean, I think next year is, I think this year would have told the story had it been a full year. I think next year ultimately tells the story. Although you're going to be looking at Buster Posey being, what, 34 at that point?
Yeah.
Because if you just look at his career to this point, the 257 last year was the outlier in terms of just him as a hitter. Him as an on-base guy, you know, as well, because he's always been a pretty good on-base guy, you know, too. And it's just the slugging has declined, the average has declined, the power has declined. And I think that's where the last couple of years, I mean, even the doubles the last couple of years were down about 30% over where he was in terms of hitting doubles. Because power is homers, and everybody loves homers, but power is also, you know, driving the ball and driving in runs and hitting doubles. So I think, you know, some of last year was the outlier, but it was the outlier wrapped into a decline that had been going on maybe for 2.5 years. So I think this would have been the year that truly would have told the story if he was able to have a bounce back.
Right.
And it only becomes more difficult next year, especially if he's still going to be a catcher. I know we've had the debate forever, you know, about when, you know, seemingly really even going back to when he got hurt in 2011. I mean, the big debate then was, well, you got to get him out from under the plate. You got to put him at first base and you got to, you know, put him at third base. There was some, even some conversation about that at one point. But now you look at it and it's, you know, is it almost too late to really make an impact? Like if they were going to do that, that ship already sailed.
Right. Right. And you think about, I don't know, we've had that conversation earlier in the show starting at 10 o'clock today, but you know, with Joey Bart coming back, well, what if Buster Posey maybe took a year off and let's just say he doesn't want to transition to first base. Say he does want to play catcher for this next year. I don't think anyone's going to be in a place to tell him, no, you can't be catcher. If he wants to do that, I think that he's going to do that. So, you know, next year too, or this year too, has a stipulation on what could happen next year and, you know, whether they called Joey Bart up a little too early and all that sort of stuff. But overall, though, I mean, doesn't having a career 302 average do it for anybody? You know, it's...
Well, not alone. I mean, no.
I feel like that is just so underappreciated. A 302 career average.
I mean, if you had 2,500 hits, sure.
Right. Right. But still, even as a catcher, like I'm going to continue to go back to the position. Like these guys historically haven't been the greatest of hitters. And you're seeing a time now where Posey along with Yadier Molina, those are the two that have been big in the past decade. Yadier Molina a little before Buster Posey's time, maybe 4 or 5 years before Buster Posey started making his way into the league. But those are the two guys that you look at historically. They're not like other catchers in baseball history. They might be like a few of them, but in the grand scheme of things, with the collective amount that have played in Major League Baseball, they are the better of the bunch. And I think that's where you're really going to have to look at it is just the position that he plays.
Yeah, I think he's in. I do think he's in. I also, though, do think there is a conversation to be had. Like, I do see where the other side will look at it and go, man, I don't know, not enough hits, not enough power. The average has been good, you know, and even not enough, you know, longevity at a again, I'll just kind of reference the way I referenced it before. The numbers when they were gaudy weren't gaudy enough for long enough, and now they haven't been, you know, almost secondarily gaudy enough the last couple of years. Like, they didn't need to be gaudy, but they needed to be a little bit closer to what they were in the middle of the career the last couple of years, and then I think it would be an absolute no-brainer with the rest of it. But I still think he's in, Stephen. I really do.
And you know, on the opposite side, and it might have been a little harsh for me earlier, JD, to say you're out of your mind if you don't think that he is in the Hall of Fame.
Well, but fans, I mean, there's a lot of, like, I think to your point about Giants fans and, like, media that covered the Giants and have covered baseball, like, I do think, I mean, fans are going to be fans, and their player's always going to be held in a higher regard. But I think as it gets evaluated, like, people that did watch him every game and they saw the intangible aspect of it, like that is real. Like, the intangible is real, and the Giants were a flash in the pan, I think, nationally in terms of their championship. So not a lot of teams or not a lot of people were really watching them, you know, day in and day out like other teams were viewed during that time where they were winning.
No doubt. And The thing that I do get, though, the longevity is kind of what makes the Baseball Hall of Fame completely different than to a lot of other sports. Yeah, it feels like when you're looking at a player, let's just look at Karl Yastrzemski, a guy who played over 20 years. Tim Raines, people weren't big fans of him getting in this year, right? Not this year, but last year. He had played for so damn long, it has something to do with it, but even though Posey's only played for 9-10 years, and you look at what he's done in that time, you can't dispute the numbers that he's put up within those 9 or 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's more than fair. Where do you have them in terms of just overall Giants or overall Giants? I mean, there's been so many great Giants, you know, in the history of the franchise. I mean, they are as rich in tradition and greatness as in terms of individual players as any baseball franchise, you know, even the Yankees in the history of the game. So, I mean, obviously Bonds and Mays and McCovey and Marichal and all of those guys are going to be in the conversation.
Yep. Gaylor, but Perry too. You got to take all those into account.
All those Hall of Famers, where do you, I mean, is Posey right up there with maybe Bumgarner and Lincecum and Kane in that next tier ahead of the Will Clarks of the world and players of that ilk?
You know, I would put Posey up there. I think that there's a, you know, you can make a good case that he's a top five Giant of all time, but there's no way that you can, I don't think you can put him above the likes of Bonds or Mays. I think Buster Posey up against Will Clark is a pretty good one just because of what Will Clark did to the city of San Francisco and the impact that he had on everybody here. But Bonds ultimately for me is the greatest Giant of all time. And, you know, the no rings thing, whatever you could say you want about that. But I mean, had game six not even happened and the pitching change not happened, they don't lose 6-5 in that World Series, then subsequently losing game seven, we'd be looking at that in a totally different way. But I think that there is a case to be made that Posey's at least in the top five conversation.
All right, he's Stephen Langford. I'm John Dickinson. We're halfway through here on a Saturday, just flying along. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We'll switch gears. We'll get into some football. But if you want to weigh in on the baseball conversation on the phones, we can do that as well, as we are with you until 2 o'clock right here on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.